Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When I first come into the first team, the players would go out on a Wednesday after the game and a Saturday after a game.
Yeah, but we were all doing this. Yeah. Alex Ferguson pulled me in many times and said, how many drinks did you have? And obviously I'd lie to him. I would say maybe 10, 11 bottles, and he'd be like, 10, 11 bottles? What are you thinking? I'm thinking, if I told him the truth, that was every hour. They were the best days of our lives.
Yeah.
Young player playing for Man United, winning trophies.
You were like a manager in the dressing room, though. You want to get back in, don't you?
Yeah. I think there's something in there where I could be a good manager.
Everyone remembers at the end you and the boss. But for 10 years, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That's why my anger is justified, because I feel I was wronged.
On the latest episode of The Overlap, I caught up with a former teammate and Manchester United legend. Roy Keane was the most influential football player that I ever played with. He was at the heart of the most dominant team the Premier League has ever seen. We talked about the highs and lows of his club career, Ireland, and his desire to get back into management. Roy, welcome to The Overlap. Every guest on The Overlap does a challenge. That's simple. It's spending an hour and a half with me and Jet.
Right.
And they always get a gift, and I didn't know what to buy you. So basically, I've got you a couple of dog toys.
Brilliant.
Do you reckon Jet will buy into that or not?
Probably not. She's not into toys, but we can try.
Go on. Let's have a see if we
come
can.
Come on, Jet.
Come on, Jet. Let's see if we can go.
Come on. Any interest? I told you. Oh. Here, come on. Try it. Eat it. Go on. She might have had a bit of maybe a bit of
maybe
interest.
No, well, it's gone down well. You know I don't like dogs, Roy. You do know that, don't you?
Oh, you're scared of them?
Not scared
of them. How come you're nervous? Why are you nervous of dogs?
I always think they stink.
Well, they're an animal, Gary, you know what I mean?
Roy, it's your 50th birthday.
Yeah. It's not old, is it?
No.
Is it? No, right.
No.
Thanks.
I'm nearly there. What point in your life do you think you're at now, today?
Oh, this is a bit heavy, isn't it?
It's heavy, yeah.
Gonna casual,
it's going to be casual. We're going to line it up in a bit.
I'll need a power nap after this, won't I? Where do I see myself?
No, like now, if you're saying to me, 50-year-old Roy Keane, looking back at those last 50 years and looking forward in this next 5 or 10.
No, what I would say is I'm pretty content with what I'm doing at the moment. But I have my days where I can be restless like everybody else. I think I want to be careful what I wish for. I'm saying to you, do I want to get back into management? But realistically, where am I going to go back into? The Championship, top of League One.
You want to get back in, don't you?
Yeah.
I can't think of anything worse than getting back in. It just, to me, the idea of being in the changing room on a training pitch and trying to manage a group of players under that.
Obviously, it's not easy. When I winded the management, Sunderland were second bottom at the Championship, but Sunderland was a great club for me. Could have done better at Ipswich, but there was pluses at Ipswich. So I think there's something in there where I could be a good manager. That's what's kind of pulling at me to go back in.
I looked at your record this week. You got promoted with Sunderland.
Right.
You then keep them in the Premier League. And then you look, say, for instance, the perception of, say, like Frank Lampard goes to Derby, doesn't get him promoted. Yeah. Then he gets Chelsea job. Scott Parker gets him promoted, but then he gets relegated again.
Right.
Does the
Gary, we're going to use that word a few times today, perception.
Yeah.
That's the most important word in football, but perception is reality. So I got to Sunderland, for example. We might as well start there. We get promoted, down to the players. Players done brilliant. And I got good backing, good recruitment. We stay up in the Premier League. I remember we stayed up, and I'm still kind of... I see managers knowing they stay up. They're getting carried around the pitch. I remember in the dressing room, kind of still a bit agitated that we could have done better. And the season I left, we were averaging a point a game, I think, in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And I think we were in the quarter-final of the League Cup. But I was still agitated. I thought we should be doing better. So that was my lack of experience. I wish, for example, I'd maybe rang somebody like Terry Venables or somebody for a bit of advice and said, and they would have probably said to me, you're doing well, you're doing fine, relax. Yeah. But I was getting all a bit.
Because you weren't like at the top?
Yeah, because when we stayed up the first season with Sunderland, for some stupid reason, I thought we would then automatically kind of go up another 5 or 6 places.
Yeah.
Which is madness. When I see teams now, we do the TV, you see teams stay up, you go, they've done brilliant. And I'd say, well, what's the priority next year? To stay up again. It's about survival for the first 3 or 4 years. We see that with any team that promoted, but I just didn't see that in myself. I just was got a bit impatient. And I, do you know what, Gary? I was in the last year of my contract And I think part of my mindset was, I need to really get another step up now to maybe get a contract or to move on to another.
Did you get off a new contract?
Yeah, I was in talks about a new contract. And I was just, because we'd lost one or two matches towards the end of my time there, I was kind of reluctant to sign a new contract, as if I was panicking. And then we lost a few matches and I didn't want to be seen to be desperate by signing it. And then before you know it, I'd left. And in the meantime, in the start of my second season Premiership, remember, Sunderland was sold to Ellis Short. And the dynamics changed a little bit. Obviously, results weren't great. But again, we were getting a point a game, which I should have been going, OK, that's fine.
What changed in terms of the relationship?
I suppose the way it's kind of the respect, the way he used to speak to me, Ellis Short. I didn't like the way he used to speak to me.
What would he say?
Just the tone of his voice. I felt, and I go back to him when I suppose I left United, even with Ireland. I think if people speak down to me or show me a lack of respect, that does irritate me. And it doesn't mean to say I'm not afraid to answer to people. Obviously, we've got owners, and when I was younger, you had senior players. But my last conversation with Ellis Short, he said, well, you need to move up to the area. And I was like, again, I'm thinking, I'm 35, 36. Why should a guy be telling me, a married man with five kids, where I should be living?
Yeah. Do you see his point?
Yeah, do you see his point? Yeah, of course I do, but I still think there's a way of saying it. It's the way someone speaks to you, Gary. Yeah. If someone speaks down to you, really, as you do, when I look back at my differences with other managers, I really feel I should only answer to my dad. I shouldn't be spoken down to by Ferguson or McCarthy. Why should they be speaking down to me?
When I went to Valencia, there's two or three things that I thought. One, I didn't have enough experience around me. One, I didn't speak the language. I shouldn't have took the job in the first place, to be honest with you. But then I wasn't ruthless enough when I actually needed to be in big decisions, like getting players out when I knew they didn't want to be there. What do you look at in terms of, sort of, say, Ipswich or Sunderland and think, I would have done that differently myself?
Do you know, Gary, every manager, everybody makes mistakes. That's what experience is about, is making mistakes. Well, where do I start? I think the key for me, I think where I got it right at Sunderland, the recruitment.
Yeah, getting the right players.
I got it wrong at Ipswich.
Yeah.
And I brought in, not necessarily the best players, not always the best characters. And I think that's the hardest part. Do I look back at my coaching and my staff and think we got that really wrong? Yeah. No, I don't think I was doing too much different to Sunderland and Ipswich. What I was doing on the training ground and the pitch and how I dealt with people. And no, I think that was one of my strengths, motivating people. When you have a good group, Gary, you have a good group. It's simple as that. And I just, even under the Sunderland, we started to win a few matches. People were kind of making out, as if we were doing something extraordinary. We weren't. We were just having good training sessions. We got momentum. The worst thing that happened to me at Ipswich, I won my first two matches, which was at the end of the season. So when I won the first two matches, I was thinking, maybe it's not so bad down here. Maybe I don't have to get, it's not a big rebuild. And then we lost one or two players and we started the season. I didn't win in my first season at Ipswich. I think we didn't win for the first 14 or 15, but 7 or 8 draws. But as we know, draws don't get you anywhere fast.
No.
And then the start of my second season, I had a dreaded chat with the owner where he's in my office and we're on the tactics board, you know, and you're going, why is he playing there? And you're looking, going, this is not right. This is not right. I knew my days were numbered then when I explained to the owner, you know, why isn't he playing right back? Why is he a left back? But I think I've obviously learnt more from my time at Ipswich than I would have done at Sunderland.
Do you know, when I was at Valencia, they kept asking me what my idea was, like, in terms of
philosophy.
Yeah. The media kept asking me, and I found it bizarre. If you went now into a new interview and you got asked that, what would you say?
Well, I have interviews. I've had interviews recently.
So where have you been for interviews recently?
Well, I spoke to a championship club about, I'd say, would it be 3 months ago.
And what did you do? Did you present to them? Was it interview?
No, very casual, very casual. It was at my house, chat, the chairman. And to be fair, he was straight up, he went, listen, we just want somebody who comes in and wins football matches.
Yeah.
And that was fine with me. I didn't have to break down styles of play. And I think if you're winning matches, people don't then question, what's your style of play? You just bounce into the next match, don't you? And we've done it as players.
It's horrible, though, when you're losing it. I mean, seriously.
It's the worst thing in the world.
And you've got that sort of, that you go home that night, you wake up the morning after. It's an indescribable feeling.
Yeah, no, it is. It's shocking. It's shocking. It's almost as if you feel you're caring too much. But I had that as a player as well. I definitely felt I cared too much. But when you're a manager, if you lose your job, it's a long way back. Again, perception. People think I'm probably not up to it. They see me on the television. They think he's a bit of a head case. I fell out with McCarthy, Ferguson. They think he's trouble.
but I don't think I am.
You were supposed to say, there, you're not.
No, you're not.
Oh, right.
No, you're not. No, you're not. But you have to get to know you. You have to get to know you, don't you? So I was thinking that, you know, in the last couple of weeks, in the last 12 months at Sky, in the studio, particularly with Mike, people seem to see the real character of you.
Right. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, but
you must understand why people do think.
But I also think, yeah, I understand that a little bit, but if you're there to try and win football matches...
But not a lot of people have a private audience with you to know you.
But what am I supposed to do with that? Go on a road show or something and try and sell myself?
I'm a celebrity. Yeah. Or the jungle.
Go and knock it, yeah. No, I'm more strictly dancing, I think. Come on, Jack. No, I know what you're saying. People say to me, you've got to put yourself out there, you've got to network.
No, but as a player, you were like a manager in the dressing room, though.
But that was maybe from my playing. That was the way I played and trained. We never used to have team talks or speeches. There was a few occasions I would say, you might remember, maybe two or three times a season, before a match, I might just turn around to the group and say, remember, lads, we're Man United. And that would be it. That would be my chit-chat.
You would never do that.
My way of leading was the way I played and trained, I suppose.
Yeah.
But we had loads in the dressing room doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
Just because I had the armband doesn't mean to say I was the only leader. People said to me, you know, I was the luckiest man in the world. We were surrounded by good lads. And I mean good lads.
You must understand, though, that when you walk into a dressing room, the rest of the players... And to be fair, there's only three or four players that I played with that had that feeling that Roy's in.
But what's the word? But I'm guessing that's a bit of respect, maybe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely,
respect.
Absolutely,
that's the word I will go back to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like when I walked into Nottingham Forest as a 19-year-old, Stuart Pearce had that for me. Yeah. Stuart Pearce had it. I was looking at him going, he didn't have to sit open his mouth. Just like the way he trained, the way he played, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily follow people who are just talking a good game. Because, listen, we know plenty of them. I was impressed by players who trained properly, who turned up on time, and who performed at the highest level. That was it for me.
Everyone remembers at the end, you and the boss.
When you're working with brilliant managers, and that respect is lost, and it was, then it's over.
You're good fun when you're out having a drink.
I think I'm good fun now when I go sober.
You're a good storyteller.
Is that not bad? What do you want me to do? Take my T-shirt off and swing it over my head?
I've said this to you before. It annoys me, this perception of sort of the idea that obviously everyone remembers at the end you and the boss.
Yeah.
But for 10 years, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But again,
it was unbelievable. You were on the pitch, him in the stand.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That's why the anger I have towards the end of my time at United and with Ireland, my anger is justified. Because I feel I was wronged. Like, we all do something, we go, do you know, I kind of played my part in that. But not on them occasions. No, I'll argue with you, you might have a different opinion about it. But I don't think so. I think...
I was there. I mean,
I know you were there. But I done that Q&A with you in Dublin. And you said, well, at the end, Ryan, the meeting, you know, there's no way back. The damage was done about 6 months before that. But I knew it was coming. I wasn't daft. Because what happened at the end of it, when you're working with people and brilliant managers, and that respect is lost, and it was, then it's over.
As a player, is it fair to say at United, your career was split in two? On and off the pitch, really. Like in your early years at United, you were marauding, you'd run everywhere, you'd chase down in the right wing, you'd be all over the pitch, box to box, and then off the pitch, you'd go out with the lads, you'd go out after games with all the rest of the players. In the second part of your United career, you was just complete discipline. I mean, like, freakish in some ways. You went to, like, 5% body fat.
It was less.
Was it?
4 point something.
I mean, that's towards ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. No, it's not good.
And off the pitch, obviously, you just didn't go out anymore.
No, or I'd still go out.
Or you did, but you just...
I'd obviously drive, maybe. Yeah. But I think there was a... When I'd done my cruciate, that was a big one. When I was out for a year, it was tough. It was tough when you're a long-term injury at the Clift. The facilities weren't great.
Yeah.
And obviously, I was a bit older.
Yeah.
Kids at the time. Like, my time at United, same as Forest. No one needed to invite me for a night out or a drink. I used to love it. To me, that was part of the package. But I had that kind of mentality from Ireland. I played League of Ireland, you know, that win or lose, you hit the booze, all that stupid carry-on. And I was a bit younger and I got away with it. But when I done my cruciate, then I thought, again, extremes. Obviously, I played in the middle of the park. But if you remember, towards the end of my career, I was kind of gaunt-looking in some of the pictures.
Yeah.
I was picking up...
Your hair was short.
Yeah, I was picking up more injuries. When I say injuries, dead legs. I was cold all the time. I remember at United playing matches.
At
15, but after 15 minutes, you know, in the dressing room at half-time, I'd be freezing because I had no protection.
But you were driving other people that way as well.
If you remember, though, Giggsy, a few of us went to a health place in Milan, and Laurent Blanc. I remember the woman giving us advice about her diet, and I think the woman said to me this... The lads before they told me went to Milan, they went, you won't be fed for 4 or 5 days. And I went, that can't be true. You know, we didn't get fed for 4 or 5 days. And I was talking about carbohydrates, proteins, Jesus. And what I found out when I came back, and I remember the lady said to me, I need to come back on my iron. Be careful with red meat. So what did I do? I stopped eating meat altogether. Now, I remember missing a game for United against Arsenal. The doctor came, he took a blood test, and he went, you need to sort yourself out, start eating properly. And my mother said the same. My mother came over from Ireland, and only your mother would tell you. She said, what are you doing? I said, well, just this new diet, you know. And she went, just start eating properly. And I, do you know what I was trying to live like? I'll be honest, I was trying to live and act like an Italian or a French player. You know, when they used to...
Was that because you had...
Yeah, because the lads in the dressing room...
You had links with them as well. You had links with Italian clubs, didn't you, at one point?
Yeah, no, not even... No, I think it was when the lads were coming to our dressing room, like Mikel and Laurent Blanc and Fabian. And I used to be looking at them and they'd be, like, doing stretches and eating salads all the time. I was thinking, oh, do you know, maybe I'll try some of that. Because I was just eating bread and potatoes and pasta. Listen, still having a half-decent diet. But I forgot what I'm about. I'm Irish. You know, I like my bit of rubbish. And that was kind of helping me in my career. That's what suited me. A lot of my life stood towards the end. You said when I was younger,
When did you stop drinking? When was your last drink?
I don't know. It was around the time when I'd done my cruciate. Yeah. My cruciate definitely triggered something in my head where I went, obviously I missed a game. Yeah. I was out for a year. I want to go back and...
But you were good fun when you were out having a drink.
But I think I'm good fun now when I go sober. No, I do.
No, but
I think I have a good crack now as much as I did.
You're a good storyteller.
Right, well, is that not bad? What do you want me to do? Take my T-shirt off and swing it over my head? But when I was younger, but again, what happens is, again, perception. I remember when I used to go over to Ireland, or when I was at United, when I used to go, people would go, oh, he's a lunatic when he's drinking. You know, he's, you know, a bit of a time bomb, be careful. A lot of people say, and then I stopped drinking. Oh, he's a loner. He doesn't want to mix with anybody. Go, well, what do you want me to do? You know, if I go out, I'm mad. I'm a loner. You can't win. But my lifestyle definitely, Gary, at the start with Forest and United, cost me a lot. I finished at 34 because of injuries, because I played and trained when I was injured.
Well, you say it cost you a lot. Do you think that's because of the early years?
Yeah, of course, definitely. And training, and I picking up injuries. It cost me a lot of games, and it definitely made me, again, I finished at 34. And the role I was playing, sit midfielder, I really should have played till I was 37 to 38, because the sitting midfielder is, I think, the easiest job on the pitch.
Yeah.
To me, that's all about experience.
Was that just something you say about the Irish side, and obviously going back to your upbringing, was that because you just go out with your brothers, your mates, you have a drink?
Yeah, and that's in my DNA. I'm not knocking myself for it, but that was the way I was brought up. Again, where I grew up in Ireland, it was people would go out and drink at weekends, and when I started then getting a bit older, I didn't drink when I was younger, but when I got to 18...
When did you first have your first drink?
Maybe 17, 18. Oh. Where lads I knew were drinking at 15, it was all about football, soccer. Yeah. And then I started playing League of Ireland. And League of Ireland is like men's football when I was 18. And what happened then after a game, League of Ireland, people go for a few pints after a game, and I just fell into that.
Yeah.
And then when I went to Forest, of course, it was in England, and I'm professional football, and I'm playing with Forest, and I'm in the first team, and I'm getting decent money. Happy days. You know, I was going...
Even when I first come into the first team, the players would go out on a Wednesday after a game and a Saturday after a game.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? You know, when you're younger, you're 21, 22 years of age, you're playing for Man United, you're getting a few bob. And after a game, I fell out with the manager a few times. That was my way of relaxing. Yeah. That was my way. People took up golf, snooker. Mine was kind of going out, enjoying myself. And if someone said to me after a game on a Wednesday, and we'd all go into Manchester, and we'd go to Chinatown, we'd be having a Chinese about 4 or 5 in the morning. Forget the fact we have a game on the Saturday. And I know we laugh about it, but that all catches up with you. But if someone said to me after a Wednesday game, going, what are you doing? Are you going home for a bite to eat? Are you going home to refuel for Saturday? I says, no, I'm going in town. I'd be thinking, they're the lunatics, not me. I thought I have to go out and drink as much alcohol as I possibly could, come around towards the morning and go, I better get ready for Saturday. And that was the life.
But you'd be always in, wouldn't you? I mean, everyone always being Thursday morning.
Of course, yeah, because you have a game on Saturday.
That's the thing that always hits me, that everyone was always in Thursday morning ready to go. But even if they'd been out till 3, 4 in the morning.
But part of it, I think what helped me a little bit, Gary, is I think the guilt. I'd have guilt for going out. So I'd be thinking on Saturday, we better win. We better win, because you're thinking, oh, because we're out Saturday, and if the manager finds out, we're in trouble. So we kind of had to win matches and trophies to justify the life we were living.
Yeah.
But if I saw a player now out where I live in Altrincham, and they were drinking maybe at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I'd be looking going, that's not good. But we were all doing this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
obviously, you weren't doing it. You were a bit younger. But the lads around here, the senior players, that's what we'd done. But Alex Ferguson pulled me in many times and said, you were out in Manchester, you got a taxi at 2:30 yesterday morning or something. I go, yeah, I did. But it's not breaking the rules because it's 48 hours. It was in our contract.
Yeah.
And I used to argue. I go, yeah, I did. And then he would say to me, well, how many drinks did you have? And obviously I'd lie to him. I would say maybe 10, 11 bottles. And he'd be like, 10, 11 bottles? What are you thinking? I'm thinking, if I told him the truth, that was every hour, you know? So it's just... So you kind of tell the odd white lie as you go along, obviously. But you're having a laugh, you're getting away with it. And do you know what? I wouldn't change any of it. And we'd done the same with Ireland. We used to turn up with Ireland on a Sunday night, and we'd have an international qualifying for the World Cup on a Wednesday. So we get into Sunday night, Jack and all this. And I was only a young player. And the senior players, I am on about Paul McGrath, Kevin Moore, and Andy Townsend, all this. And I'd be sitting there going, hey, Jack, can we go tonight? And Jack go, look, lads, big game on Wednesday. You know, can we just go? All right, lads, try and be back for about midnight. Right, midnight. We're playing on Wednesday, Spain in the qualifying. Well, Jack, and I'd be sitting there going, yeah, I'll go for a few pints. But this is about 6 o'clock. You still have 6 hours drinking. Jack, 12 is a bit awkward, you know, if you're out at 12 in Dublin, any chance you went, 2 o'clock, lads. 2 o'clock, be back for 2 o'clock, that's it. But Jack, you know, if you're out at 2, you're obviously in a nightclub. You know, if you stay till 2, that means you're not gonna leave a nightclub, but do you? Look, I'll see you in the morning for training, and that was it. We'd come in at 7, 8 in the morning, and Jack would push training back to the afternoon because we'd sleep off the hangovers. But you know what, Jack, it's obviously
a
stupid
thing. Brick wall for him.
Yeah, because that was management. He knew the senior players. He knew Paul McGrath would do the business. Yeah. He knew as a young player, I'd probably do the business on a Wednesday. And not nine times out of ten, but a number of times we would get results for Jack. And he'd go, listen, who am I to stop these lads going out? You obviously couldn't do it now. And, yeah. Well, you couldn't do it now with social media, of course, sports science.
Yeah. I always remember the first time we won the league and we were in Mulligan's and you walked in with Norman. Do you remember?
Norman Whiteside, right.
With a flag with the right. United flag.
Right, brilliant. Yeah.
And everyone just started singing.
Yeah, it? Brilliant, yeah. Listen, great days. And I count my blessings. Some of our chat there can be, oh, I fell out with somebody, or there was negativity here and there. But they were the best days of our lives.
Yeah.
Young player, playing for Man United, winning trophies. And I loved the dressing room. I loved the dressing room at United. I tell you, Gary, I can't tell you how much I loved it. And obviously we go back and go, what do you miss? Do you miss the trophies? Do you miss the money? I miss that chat.
The thing was, you had to be out. I always remember not going to one of the first dudes out and Brucey pulling me the day after and saying, never again.
Yeah.
And from that moment on, I never missed a night out right to the end of my career.
Yeah, but you were always forced to go home, though, weren't you?
No, it was Phil.
Oh, it was Phil, right. And you were next. Peter wanted a fight. And Bobby Charlton apparently stuck his head out and he saw me and him doing it. I bet he's thinking, f***ing hell. But I think we won the league that year, so it helped. I don't know.
You didn't like it when lads come in and they change.
I couldn't understand why a player needed 5 cars.
I never thought I'd see you on Instagram. I was laughing then, thinking, when you're telling the story about you and Schmeichel in Singapore.
Oh, fighting, yeah.
In the corridor.
Fighting.
And it's just you two on your own.
No.
And you're telling the story in the morning after. Fucking someone wake up, please, he's drunk.
Yeah, well, he's drunk,
25
Peter.
Minutes it's going on.
Yeah, but the good thing with me and Peter fighting that night, and it was his fault, and he held his hand up, he apologised. It was fine, it was all like, you know, grown men were pre-season, bit of tension in the group, which can happen, grown men, obviously you're playing to get in the team, you're playing for a contract. And Peter wanted a fight, but I had a fight with Pally in Marbella. You know, I was at Pally a few weeks ago, honestly, great guy.
When you tell that story, I always have a vision of you and Peter rolling the corridor, all of us asleep.
I vaguely remember, I think Bobby Charlton, I told you that, he opened the door, he apparently stuck his head out and he saw me and him doing it. I bet he's thinking, f***ing hell. But I think we won the league that year, so it helped, I don't know. But even that, when I came down that morning after that fight, I remember thinking with the lads, going, I'm sure I was fighting, I can't even remember. I remember my hand, I was saying, I'm sure I was fighting last night, and one of my fingers all bent back. And then I think Butty was on the scene, to be fair. Butty was.
He's always around, wasn't
he? He's around Butty, and he explained what happened. And I think Peter had a black eye, to be fair to him.
Was it over? It's been brewing for a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah. Again, like the Fergs, I think, at the end, it's brewing, Gary. It doesn't just kick off, you know that. There's tension there.
In terms of growing up, you played football, but you're also boxing as well, and you also had, like, you know, you were doing sports like boxing, which is just, to me, is like completely...
Yeah, but where I grew up, that's all you do. There's soccer, hurling, football, and boxing. That was to keep busy, Gary. That was just to pass an evening, fitness. When I say I'd done the I was only 9-10 years of age. I'd done boxing for 3 or 4 years.
You like the boxing, didn't you?
It's more the training. The discipline. And again, it's something different.
Yeah.
But I wasn't... I didn't have, like, 50 amateur fights. I had, like, three or four. My brother was a boxer. So all my family, I've come from a sporting background.
Yeah.
So I was going to try my hand at every sport. And then when I got to, 14 or 15, when training sessions were clashing with each other, I just thought, I'm just going to play football. Soccer. My dad played soccer at a good level. My three brothers played soccer, all at a good level. So the most natural thing in the world for me was I was going to play soccer.
You lost your dad a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So that was...
Is that bad for you? In terms of course, how do you deal with that, Roy Keane?
You just, like everybody else, you know, you just get on with it and, yeah, it's tough.
Do you think about him more now than you did before?
But what he did give me, good DNA. I think he was mad for the sports. He gave me good habits. He gave me one or two bad ones. My dad had very little patience, to be fair to him, but...
What was his best bit of advice to you?
No, do you know what he used to always say to me? Make sure you get stuck in. That would be his technical advice. Get stuck in. But he was right. Get stuck in, no matter what happened with your team, if you're winning, losing, get stuck in. I think they were pretty wise words. You know, it doesn't have to be anything too fancy. And my dad played the game, but he taught me he'd one or two bust ups with his managers. He played for. He told me a great story where he got new boots one day. He got new boots, and obviously, listen, wouldn't have had much money when he was younger. He's a big family himself, and the manager never played him. And he described he just picked up his new boots and he flung them at the manager, and that was my dad. So he's passed on. Never true boots at anybody, but yeah.
And what about your mum?
Yeah, well, my mother's still in there, hanging in there, back in Cork. And going back to Ireland gives me a bit of a break. I need my fix.
You used to go back there a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, and I still do. And what I love going back now, again, with the freedom I have, I love going back on the boat. I always drive back. I go back to Dublin, drive down. When I got to Cork, even my family, my wife and kids here go, you know, you need to go to Cork just to get my...
Nothing about you is lavish, is it? You do all things really simple, don't you, in terms of...
I think so. But I like nice things in life. You know, I like to, if I can travel or, you know... But I wouldn't...
Tell us about the watch story and the watch you bought in pre-season.
Oh, for United, yeah, that's an old story. But, yeah, Sharpie. But, again, so I've made mistakes like everybody else. But, no, I bought a... But, again, I first came to United. I'd been to Forest. And I thought, you know, nice watch. I was in town with Sharpie, great guy. And we saw this Rolex. Again, I didn't have a clue. Rolex, watch, God knows. And the guy was trying to sell me this watch, and I was looking, it was like 1,100. But it was another watch for 2,000, but he was saying to me, you know, I'd recommend one for 1,100. And I was thinking, good guy, because I thought he'd be trying to sell me the more expensive one. So he took the watch away, and I'm sent to Sharp. I said, he seems a nice fella, really good guy. He's looking after me. He's not trying to sell me the more expensive one. He went, what's it mean? I said, well, he's selling me that one. I've given my credit card for, 1,150. And Sharp, he went, no. I was 11,500. I said, you're serious. Yeah. The best one is the guy, he went, well, tell the guy you don't want it. I went, nah, sick. Cringy.
Ego.
Yeah, quite ego, pride, Gary. Yeah. Famous last words. But he came out with a watch, and I went, cheers, thanks a lot. And I remember he said to me, you're a very rare watch, you know, people could chop your arm off for this, very rare. We left, there was one in the shop across the road. I remember looking at it. And I said to Sharp, I went, hey, keep that to yourself. I went, you know, I'm new to the club. I don't think I'm a fool. And the next day we get on the bus and all the lads are like, hey, what time is it? I'm like, oh, idiot. I still have it. I still have the watch. And it's gone up in value. So I think I was thinking long term. An investment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's laughing now? Yeah.
But you used to have what was your registration? RK.
J60 Roy. No, when I came, but you know what happened? You know, I tell you, another example. I bought a Forest. I signed a new contract before I left. I thought, I'm going to buy a nice car. I went and bought a Mercedes, nice. And I went to collect it, and the guy went, oh, I got your reg and put it on it for you. The guy done it for me. I didn't even go, I need a private reg. And obviously, when you look back now, obviously, you're cringing.
It was red as
well.
It
was red, of course. Listen, I didn't keep it long, obviously. But I was always wary, lads, at United for that. I probably was a bit...
You didn't like it, did you? When lads come in and they change, you hate it.
No, I did. If I'm going to be annoyed at myself, it would be stuff like this, but I hope I was coming from a good place. Jesus, I sound like Mother Teresa here. But I was trying to go... I just hated if I thought lads were getting distracted by car. But I couldn't understand why a player needed 5 cars. Or 4 cars, and Bex would do it, Rio. And I know they were making good money, but I just thought, please don't be distracted by the cars and the watches. Everyone's got watches, no one Patek Philippe. But don't, my fear was always that that is now becoming your focus, not what the game. Good luck to you. Listen, spend your money all you want, Christ almighty. Don't let that become your priority. That was always my worry. And maybe lads would maybe get irritated by that, maybe.
I never thought I'd see you on Instagram. How was that? Who broaches that subject with you first time and says...
My youngest daughter.
And she goes, what, go on, tell me the conversation.
Go on, Dad, listen, we were in lockdown. Can you do it just for a laugh? Blah, blah, blah. Sitting at the kitchen table, my 16-year-old daughter. And I went, yeah, come on, let's do it for a laugh, bit of fun. So it's my daughter. But I've met people, have said to me, who's your team? Where's your team based? I went, where's my team? As if I have a team.
I went, that play as now as a social
quote, I'm pretty sure they have, but I thought, oh, I have a team based in New York and London, you know, they work. It's me and my 16-year-old daughter, she's chief executive, yeah.
Does she still manage it now for you?
Well, we say manage it. Can we do a picture? Let's do a picture today. Is that managing it? Yeah, is that managing it? I don't know. But people said...
I looked this morning, you've got 1.4 million followers on Instagram.
Right. What does that mean?
It means you're very popular.
No, it's just people look at your photo. Is that you look at your photograph and have a nose at you?
But you don't want to build. I think, to be fair, I think it helps you. You talked about perception before, about how people see
it helps,
you.
But helps me in what way?
I think it helps
but
you.
But I have a good life. Helps me with what?
No, because I think it helps you, because you said about before about perception.
Would it get me a job?
It could.
Instagram might get me a job. So that my pro licence, forget my pro licence and all my football experience, Instagram will get me a job. That's great, that. You should have told me that years ago. Jesus.
The Mick McCarthy one.
It's bizarre to accuse me of missing a match. But I just had enough. I went, no, there's no gear. There must be footballs. No footballs. Nothing. It was like, if you've seen the training pitch, you look down, you go, is this for real?
How did you not get agitated with most players, with the demands that you put on people?
But I didn't, Gary, do you know? But even though I was at United, I never really got agitated. I don't think I did.
No, but like the demands you know, I can imagine you looking at your players in your dressing room at Sunderland. I did. So when I was manager for 4 months, I would look at them and think...
But I wouldn't get agitated at a player's, I suppose, lack of skill. I'd get agitated by their attitude or players being late or not focusing properly.
You hate late, don't you?
Yeah. But you should, you shouldn't, you know? Why do you like people being late? Does anyone like somebody being late? You were late one time for the bus, remember? And we came speeding in the car park, do you remember?
Yeah. What happened there? Did I lose?
I don't think we fined you. I don't think you paid it. Do you remember? And you left your car running. You got on the bus because we were fining each other. So, these little things would agitate me, yeah. But I think there's nothing wrong with that.
What do you make of Man United the last 8-9 years since Sir Alex left and what the club's done?
Chop and change the managers. Everyone thought Mourinho was the one, Van Gaal was the one, Ollie. Ollie had a good start, a couple of years back. Now we're looking. We'll go back to recruitment, chopping and changing, or problems maybe upstairs with the Glazers. All that doesn't help. Mm. I know when we were at the club, I think we felt everyone was in it together, whether that was right or wrong. And I think when you're winning matches, that's what it feels like anyway.
No, we did.
There was that, and we had momentum. And I go back to our dressing room. I think I count my blessings. I think, Gary, we had the best dressing room. When I first walked into the United dressing room, I couldn't believe how good the lads were. Dennis Irwin, Park, Sharpie, Giggsy. Then obviously you were coming through. I'd never ever remember going to a United dressing room and in my time in training going, not a great bunch this or whatever, or we've lost it. Now I fell out with people towards the end where I was demanding more out of players, but that's because lads I thought were getting distracted off the field stuff.
I don't remember you falling out with anyone towards the end.
No, but if you remember the kind of last meeting we had in the dressing room before we went upstairs, remember? Yeah. Listen, that was about phones and being on time and refocusing, and that was it. That was no big deal.
You couldn't stand people being on phones. Are you like that with your children? With the phones and stuff?
Yeah, a bit, at the right time. But again, I've said before, I don't live in a cave. I understand people, the modern players are on their phones and all that. And I know the game has changed, and again, I'm not a dinosaur, but again, I used to love the chat in the dressing room before and after matches. And when I first went to United, we'd be sitting there, you're on about sports science, we'd be having a cup of tea and a box of biscuits, and we'd be chatting about families, what we're up to, who was out last night. And again, I've got examples when I was at Sunderland Ipswich, I would put on DVDs of like great teams and great managers, documentaries, and I'd be intrigued by it, and I'd be on the bus watching it, and it'd be Bill Shankly or something, and I'd go, this is amazing, and I turn on the bus, and these are players who can't trap the ball, by the way, and they've got the headphone, nobody's watching, I'm going, you might just watch it. You know, one of you watch, even pretend you're watching it. So you always say students of the game. I think the players know.
Are you a student of the game?
I bloody am, yeah. But I see the players now, and listen, they don't have that passion that I think they should have at the moment. If that's your job and that's your livelihood, and you're trying to win football matches, we had a little bit, you get it at certain clubs and certain teams. Then I went working with Ireland, with Martin, with a brilliant group. It was brilliant in terms of job satisfaction. The Irish setup was brilliant because, again, we had a good dressing room and a group. Well short in terms of real quality, but we had a good group. You enjoyed working with them, going through the Euros. That was brilliant. I love the flow of the job. And obviously you've done it with England.
Well,
you're away together for a week or two. It's intense.
I loved it. So I tell you why I loved it. Because I was doing stuff. I didn't want to train the team, which I wasn't doing. I liked doing the analysis of the games. I liked doing the pre-match presentations, the post-match presentations, and that was me. I liked it. I actually didn't like the sessions. I'd rather not even watch the sessions, me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's like, what, I was watching the sessions. Like,
but when I started, you know, when you first started your coaching badge, I remember Peter said, you have to see yourself as a coach or a manager. So straight away I saw myself as a manager. Doesn't mean say you can't do any coaching, of course you do. Yeah. But I didn't have the passion for coaching that some of my staff had. Yeah. So I enjoyed that stepping back a little bit and maybe watching the sessions and not being in the middle of it. And the good thing about Ireland, you're on about being clear in your head. So we'd go away obviously for a week or two. You have them two games, nothing else mattered. You weren't worried about, when you're at club level, it's about the medical staff, contracts, bonuses, academy.
It's cleaner.
It's like, well, just focus on that match.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to interrupt us this week. You're in the hotel. And obviously I was working with Martin, who I found, I thought Martin O'Neill, you're on about working with people. And not many people have given me breaks in football, let me tell you. But Martin gave me a break by bringing me back in with Ireland. Yeah. And I was able to do a little bit of coaching.
I was surprised you as an assistant.
At international level, it's fine.
Yeah.
I tried it at Villa with Paul. I went to Forest with Martin and not for me. I would never again. Do you know, not any level.
Just because you weren't making the decisions on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I was missing that. But the good thing with Martin was Martin's experience, he kind of was, you were a feeling, obviously I knew he was making the final decision, but he was listening, Gary.
Yeah.
And he was great company and he'd done a great job. Yeah. And we had a good group of players who were like turning for Ireland having a go. But then at the end with Ireland, one or two players started f***ing me off. Again, not training properly, talking a good game. And then, you know, I eventually fell out one or two players, which I think is part of the game. I think you're supposed to fall. You know, when people don't fall out with people, I go, you know, you're not challenging each other, pushing each other.
Do you feel like people throw your name in just because it's a cheap shot and it's a headline?
I think so. I think some players, I've heard some players saying they fell out with me, and I go, I never fell out with you. I think they enjoy the buzz going, they challenged me. No, I fell out one or two players at Ireland because they were turning up, and guess what, not wanting to train. Yeah. And I was looking at all their stats, and I watched these players every week, and I was looking going, you're not playing and you don't want to train. You're idiots. But these lads were idiots anyway. People think, oh, just because they're footballers. No, they'd be idiots if they're walking on a building site. They were just time wasters. And I couldn't tolerate them. And I think it was my job to challenge them. Did I challenge them sometimes in the wrong way? Maybe. Did I try and motivate them? Sometimes you get that wrong, but that's management and coaching. Yeah. And sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. But you're thinking they might want to listen to me. They might realise I've played at a high level. I've managed at a high level. I might have something to add, but they're just gone.
Is that because as well with Ireland that you're actually, they're just going back to the clubs as well, you haven't got that attachment to them really?
But I think that's a good thing as well.
Yeah.
You know, I got a phone call one time after an international match. One of the players never turned back up at his club. And the manager rang me, said, oh, such a person, I won't mention who. I was like, I couldn't care less where he is. We finished with him last night. I don't care if he's been kidnapped. It's your own problem. You know, don't be bringing that to me. But that's the beauty of international football. You have him for the week.
Where was it?
10 days.
Where was it?
I think he's been drinking somewhere. Yeah. Listen. But the guy had previous. But I still think the manager, why are you ringing me? As if I know where he is. I felt like I've done my work last night. I'm relaxing. Again, find him yourself. And obviously he turned up a few days later.
The Mick McCarthy one that you talked about before, that emanated though from when you was a player as well, did that?
When I was a player. But again, when you remember, I remember going to the senior squad with Ireland. And I don't expect fellas to babysit you, but some players don't go to their way to help you, don't you? And there was plenty with Ireland, but there was one or two who were great with me. Yeah. Dave O'Leary, Andy Townsend, Paddy Bonner, great lads. But there was sort of one or two who didn't even, I reckon barely had a conversation with me, which is fine because you turn up on a Sunday night, Monday, and as you know, this is before the international break, you play on a Wednesday, there'd be people you wouldn't even get to chat with.
Yeah.
So me and Mick, and I had a follow with Mick in America again, and we said a few things to each other. No, not really. Okay, listen, I was out of order, I was drinking, but I was drinking with loads of other lads.
Yeah.
And what I didn't get,
what
and again,
did you do?
Hopefully.
What happened?
No, we'd been drinking, we were late for the bus.
You were late?
I was late, right. OK, I was late. I was late. I was late for the beer, and Jack Charlton was having a go. Jack's the manager. But I didn't want a player having a go at me who's never spoke to me. If Paddy Bonner or Dave O'Leary, who probably helped me, were saying, Roy, you know, and I go, yeah, I take that, but not from somebody who never spoke a word to me and who was shouting at me in front of everybody. So that would have been the start of it. And then it comes to a head where people... I said to you, I finished when I was 34 because of injuries, because I played with injuries and trained. Like every other player, I'm not saying I was any different to anybody else. And then for a manager, again, a team meeting with senior players are on going, you could have played in this... Well, we qualified for the World Cup in 2002. Do you not remember the group we had? Holland, Portugal, we had 10 matches. 1-7, drew 3. We had the same points as Portugal, but we had to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think, if I remember, I played in all the games. I played in the first playoff match, and I missed the second one because I had an injury. So in 12 qualifying games, I played 11 and missed one. And strangely enough, these are the facts, for a manager to bring it up to a senior player, I was captain, but a senior, that I could have played in that match. It's bizarre to accuse me of missing a match. But all the other stuff people talk about, the equipment, the gear, and that was all, we'd moved on from that. That was the week earlier. People still want to bring that up.
But you were, to be fair, you were like that United. If the facilities weren't right, if the training pitch wasn't set up, you were always...
But isn't that not a senior player's job? But again, with Ireland, Gary, it was to the extreme. We qualified. You think after qualifying out of a tough group, we'd go over there and go on, do you know what, this team might do something
here. Is that a financial thing or is that like a plan?
You can't play them financial all the time. To get a pitch and for your gear to turn up on time. You know, but Gary, you got to imagine it. We'd travel, obviously, 54 connection flights and we ended up at a hotel.
54 connection.
And we ended up in an island. Oh, by the way, there's no gear here. Like, imagine if it happened with England or France or Brazil. But for some reason, it's Ireland. It's like, oh, this is funny, it's Ireland. I couldn't get my head around it. But I did after a few days. I went, I have to move on. I was fuming. I let a few people know I wasn't happy, including the manager. But I moved on. Because the next year we were flying out to the official training ground, which was with FIFA, which you're thinking, well, FIFA's going to be fine. But imagine you getting to a train. Imagine going to a training session. And remember, we didn't qualify a week before. We got, you know, it was a bit tight getting the gear over. We qualified 6 months earlier. I know, and again, you laugh at it, Gary. And I laughed. I've been laughing for years with Ireland. You know, that's what we do with Irish, blah, 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 you know, win or lose at the boot. But I just had enough. I went, no. Especially for the manager, I'm going, listen, you.
That was the first time, I think, that anyone had seen you walking the dog, wasn't it, when you got back from Ireland?
Well, yeah, but, you know, when you have dogs, guess what they need? They need walks. I was going to walk them. So we go, oh, you know, your dogs every day.
Is this the first time you've ever been filmed on a dog walk where you've not been a bit of trouble?
I've been chased, yeah. But even then I came back and people go, oh, yeah, you fell out. But it was nothing to do with the gear. We got over that. So for somebody to say to me in front of you, again, we had a load of senior players, players who played a lot more games than me, sat in the meeting, sitting on, and you have a manager accusing a player of something. If that was any other player, I'd be going, oh, hold on a second, where are you going with this one? But it's all forgotten about because it's, again, the usual PR crap. I know when you come back...
You're not a PR, are you?
But when you come back, I can deal with all that. But you've got family. You've got family now.
It's politics, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be, yeah. But I had that when I was 15 with Ireland. I had it when I went to... When I was 16, I went away with Ireland. We qualified for the European Championships. Yeah. One player didn't get a minute on the pitch. And that was me. So I'd make kind of a few hang-ups anyway, going, I was told when I was 15, I had an Irish try, you're too small, you're not coming back. And you have all these hang-ups with Ireland, you know what I mean? And then you go with the senior team, eventually we qualify out of an unbelievably tough group. Holland never qualified out of our group.
Yeah.
And we're going there and people are going, but we just, there's no gear. What do you mean? There's no medical gear? No, there's no gear at all. There must be footballs. No footballs. No bibs. No, but nothing. It was like, if you've seen the training pitch, you look down and you go, is this for real? And all the other lads were laughing. I was looking at all the other lads and going, that's why you're winning. Called some of you at your clubs as well. There was a bit of that as well going, the laughing's got to stop now. Yeah. The laughing's got to stop. Because we fans, people go, is it money? We fans, you'd have Irish fans borrowing their money, selling their television to go and follow Ireland. But they still want to see Ireland winning. I don't care what anyone says. Yeah. I experienced that when I was a player and when I was at Martin. We lost our job because we won't win enough matches towards the end, which is a disgrace, really, because they replaced Martin with Mick McCarthy and then Stephen Kenny. But that's another story. Being in the public eye, I detest it. I hate it.
Do you think it's because you're popular?
No, I just think people who invade you with your phone, you're just annoying.
Do you know, I've only ever asked, I think, someone a picture once. Cillian Murphy.
Oh, right, yeah, and he said no. Brilliant.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So what would you class as your passion away from football? You love football. You absolutely love football.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your passion away from football?
Family, dogs. Okay. Is that it? That's it. I love watching other sports.
Yeah.
I've been to the last couple of Super Bowls. Went to Miami last year.
Do you go out for meals?
Yeah, I go for meals. But I wouldn't go, like, what day is today? I wouldn't go on Saturday night. I'd go into maybe Altrincham on a Tuesday at 6 o'clock for tea.
So no one was in?
Yeah. But then you just for a bit of privacy, Gary. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
You hate the idea of, like, being in a restaurant, it's full or...
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that wouldn't sit right with me. Or, being in the public eye... I hope you agree with me. I detest it. I hate it. Not worse than people coming up. Listen, people can be polite, but still sticking a phone or following you on the camera or doing something, you're going, and then the people think you're rude, but I'm the rude one and you're coming up. And I think really good fans. I bumped into a United fan the other guy, he was showing me his tattoo, and he just said, all right, blah, blah. And he walked on, I'm thinking, that's a proper fan. People who invade you with your phone or jerseys, I think you're just annoying.
Do you think it's because you're popular?
No, I just think because people are busy and they see somebody who might be in the public eye and they go, I just want a piece of you, or can you sign that? Even City fans come up, hey, a photograph. Well, you want a photograph with me? Why? Because I can send it. It's just, to me, it's a busyness. It's not a respect thing.
Yeah.
I think the people who respect you leave you alone. If I saw somebody walking down the street, if I saw Bob Dylan come down there with his guitar, I'd probably just go, hey, Bob, and let him walk by. I wouldn't go, fucking photograph, Bob. Looking on it. Well, I'm pretty sure I know what he'd say. So the people I might receive...
Have you ever asked for an autograph of anyone?
Do you remember we went to London for the BBC? We got sports team there. Did you get a photograph of Muhammad Ali? Do you remember Muhammad Ali was there?
No, I didn't. Yeah.
No, and that would have been the ideal situation if I was going to go after anybody. Listen. Yeah. But if you remember when the show finished, all the lads were over, and I remember going, leave him alone. And I'm glad I did. He was an old man. He was not well. Yeah. But that's the one I would have got a photograph. I've asked one player to swap a jersey, which I regret, when I played Germany with Ireland pre...
In your life?
Once to swap a player for Germany in the pre-94 World Cup. We played Germany in a friendly. And after the game, again, we'd beaten him, to be fair, and he's walking on. I said, I was being polite.
Cause was it?
What's this, the sweeper, Sammer? He said, no. I went, anyway, no, but that was it. And I just thought, I shouldn't be asking any. But I'm just kind of, honestly, it was polite. But not that I wanted his jersey. If I really wanted to swap with somebody, probably even Zidane or somebody. I went. So after that, I went, you know what, it is stupid swapping jerseys, really. And Zidane, I remember we played him United, and obviously Zidane, brilliant player. And after the Madrid game, we were walking up, and we literally, sometimes you just walk up the player, and I was like, kind of looking at him, I was like, and he was looking at me, I was thinking, he'd probably ask me. But no, and we didn't, I'm glad. That was the only other time I thought, will I want that? And I'm going, nah, leave it.
Do you know, I've only ever asked, for, I think, someone a picture once, and it was a man from Cork. I think I've told you the story. Killian Murphy.
Oh, right, yeah, and he said,
Peaky
no,
Blinders.
Brilliant, I love that.
I've been on set all day.
Brilliant.
You know, all the cast have come up and Killian Murphy comes on, I love the programme to bits, comes on at the end and says, oh, can I have a picture? He said, no, I've got some filming to do now.
Brilliant.
Walked off, I thought, he was a spitter, baby.
But I get where he's coming from. He was working or he was in the zone.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant, but do you not dislike him for that?
No, I don't dislike him.
Oh, good, good.
No, I don't dislike him. No, just it was a bit embarrassing at the time.
I would be, yeah. That's why you probably shouldn't ask. Because no, you're setting yourself up for a fall. That's why I would never maybe embarrass myself like that in case somebody said... But there's no one I kind of hold up there where I go, I'd love a photograph with him. You know what I mean? I don't think there is.
Have you ever told the Tom Cleverley story?
Oh, yeah.
On camera?
Yeah, which the one when he didn't come on loan. Yeah, poor Tom. Yeah. No, I feel bad for that. Again, that was stupid, wasn't it? Yeah. So do you want me to go there? Well, it's a long story, but when we had Tom at, he was coming to Villa on loan. But I knew he liked Everton because, listen, I know I'd heard that he obviously had been there before and he knew Martinez. And I was gone to Villa. And Paul said, yeah, we're doing it. And I was away with Ireland. So I rang Paul. He went, oh, Tom's now not coming. He said, Tom's now not coming. I went, are you sure? And he went, no, Roy, we've pulled the plug. He's going to Everton. I said, I knew it, Paul. I knew he was leading us up the garden path. We spoke to him for a few weeks. I'd spoke to him. And we were there and I went, are you sure he's not coming, Paul? Paul's the manager. He went, no, Roy, we're leaving it.
You're away with Ireland.
I'm away with Ireland. It's the international break, obviously, but transfer deadline day was that night. Yeah. So I get Tom's number. And obviously, I knew Tom a little bit of United. So I said, I give it to Tom, you're a disgrace. Blah, blah, blah. You've said you were coming. I know, Roy. So I know you. Blah, blah. I went on for about, honestly, half an hour. I remember thinking, hang up on me. He didn't even hang up. I'm going to hang up so I can stop. So anyway, we're training the next morning with Ireland, and obviously I'm going. And they went, oh, there's a couple of players went, oh, see, Tom Cleverley's gone to Villa. I went, no, no, I said, no, the deal was off. The deal was off. And they went, no, no, he signed. I went, no, 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 the deal's definitely on. He's not going to Villa. I ring Paul. I went, Paul, has he signed you? Yeah, yeah, we done it the last minute. Oh, God. So you've set me up. No, so I had to ring Tom. No, I went back to Villa a couple of days. I went, right, Tom, good to have you on board. honestly, hey, felt about that big. Hey. That's not a good story. That's a bad story. Jesus. But there you go. And you know what? A couple of months later, I think he ended up seeing his contract and going to... I think he ended up going to Everton anyway. So I knew Villa was a stopgap for him.
What was Villa? You didn't like Villa, did you? You didn't enjoy the job.
The one reason I went to Villa, because I was with Ireland, I went, no, coaching with a Premier League team, I can get my hours in to keep, you know, learning. Yeah. I was learning because I'm a student, Gary, as you know, at the game. But I didn't like the group. I have to say, the group of players, and what I do, if I dislike group of players, or if I fall out one or two, and I didn't really, I kind of kept my guard up. I went, I'm not losing it with players who I thought, every club will have one or two. I thought Villa had six or seven lads I couldn't take to, because I thought really bad lads, not good pros.
Well, bad for you is not behaviour, is it? It's like you just made, what would
bad be
for you?
Some of it was behaviour, just attitude to training, late for training, if they come off the bench, not trying because they've been left out.
Yeah,
all that, Gary. Yeah. And then when I left, then because I thought I'm going to just focus on Ireland, and I think, is it me? Am I just? And the players who I end up following, I follow their careers. You know, I do close in case I thought maybe I got that really wrong, and I was a bit harsh on them. They do nothing. Same with a couple of lads I fell out with Ireland. They do nothing in their careers. So I'm thinking I kind of was trying to help them. Not that I fell out with anyone at Villa. I couldn't be bothered following them because what's the point in going there with these lads who were imposters, who were disgrace, and some of them now are doing the media talking about players. And if you'd listened to them going, you were the worst. There was two lads at Aston Villa, the worst professionals I've met in my life, for attitude, for desire, the way they'd speak to the staff. I used to look at them going, why you? I never experienced that ever, the way they were speaking to staff. And then one of them tried to speak to me, and I went, don't speak to me like you speak to the rest of the staff. And then that's you falling out with people.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Go, all right, lads, yeah, I don't want to fall out with you. So I'd rather fall out with somebody than pander to them.
I made the mistake of saying student at the game on television once. I think he said it about 400 times to me.
You said Wayne Rooney's a student of the game. We're all students of the game.
This is the bits I love about having conversations with you.
We all love the game.
Roy, we do a section on the overlap called Failure is a Bruise, Not a Tattoo.
Right, OK.
Which is a saying someone sent to me after I finished.
And right. Yeah, but there's loads of sayings.
No, I know. There's loads of sayings.
Yeah, I know, and just plenty more of them, Gary.
What moment in your life would you look at as being your low, where you think, that's where my low was? Where you've basically lost your confidence, you've had doubts, you've just thought...
Oh, I think when I was a manager at Ipswich, probably, yeah. Yeah, when I was a manager, you just...
That was your lowest point?
Yeah.
Did you have a psychologist at Sunderland and at Ipswich?
Yeah, it was me most of the time. No, we had a guy... Again, you're on about what do players want? But we had a guy come in at Sunderland, and it was like, obviously, no pressure, players, and the players went to see him, yeah? And do you know what I found out, Gary? The guy, when I used to finish, he'd obviously never tell me the ins and outs, but he said more of the staff were going to see him than the players.
At Ipswich? Oh, at Sunderland.
More of the staff. So what I soon found out about that as well is going, obviously, as a manager, you're focused all the time on your players.
Yeah.
Your staff. Your staff need that support. It could be family stuff off the field. And hopefully, listen, I'd like to think I was helpful in that side of it.
But you saw psychologists at United as well, because I did as well, when they were brought in. Did it help you with confidence, help you with...?
No, not on that side of it. What I went to see, you're talking about Bill, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason I went to see Bill was, again, if you remember at United, Gary, I tried the weights, we tried yoga. You would try these things. So I went to see Bill. I don't think Bill was a great help to me, but he wasn't a disappointment either.
No.
But what I learned from Bill, his big message to me was, not necessarily about changing personality where I played, more about me staying on the pitch. He used to always say to me, you need to stay on the pitch for 90 minutes, because obviously I'd been sent off once or twice. So that's what I learned from him, which was good. Yeah. And if that's all I got from Bill, that's fine, because I know I'd done at Ipswich, you can bring in the sports psychologists who do the videos with the animals nearly dying. You remember the crocodile getting attacked? We've all seen them, and that is, the game is about survival, more so for management. Listen, do you know what intrigues me about football? I'll tell you about management. I've had two opportunities as a manager. And listen, I have turned down one or two jobs. I'm not saying they were a huge job. But why do certain managers get one or two chances? They're gone, and I mean finished. I'm a member of the LMA, managers on that list. Then there's other managers get 7, 8, 9, 10 chances. I can't understand why certain managers, and I'm on about managers, Championship and League One.
But you won't network. You won't play the game.
I can't be just networking, Gary.
But you won't play the game.
What's the game?
The game, you know the game.
I don't know the game.
You do know the game.
I don't know the game.
It's about getting in with the journalists, in with the media, in with the chairman. No, it's about having that. It is. You know it is.
Gary, when I was at Ireland, I was scouting. I was going to matches every week. I was sitting in chairman's room. I was getting looked after. Is that networking? I was being polite to people.
Yeah, but you wouldn't network, would you? You wouldn't. I wouldn't network either. It's not unique.
But educate me. What is networking? What is networking?
You wouldn't play the game, the PR game, the media game.
What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What would help me get a job? Tell me. Exactly. Do an interview with someone.
I think what you do.
An interview with someone from the Times, like something that carries a bit of weight.
You'd build your football idea. You'd have a presentation. You'd talk about it in that way. You'd play the game. You know, like managers doing interviews. They play the game, don't they?
Yeah.
That sort of game. You don't play that game. I honestly think now owners look at managers and they think of them. Oh, what's their idea? What's the presentation like? I think they genuinely look at these things. I'm not saying I do. But I'm saying, you know that basically that's what happens. You said, why do some managers get loads of jobs? It's because they play the game.
I'm on about managers who've done nothing and getting like 7, 8, 9. I can understand a guy playing the game.
Give me an example. Who's to be an example?
Oh, Gary. What managers have had loads of opportunities? There's been loads, Gary. I wouldn't even name names. It'd probably feel like I'm having a go at them.
Yeah.
There's been loads who've had 6, 7, 8 jobs in the Championship. 6, 7, 8 jobs in the Championship. There's been managers in the Premier League who've had loads of chances, loads. Again, it's perception. Yeah. I look at teams who are not winning football matches, obviously. I hear you'd be on the television, and I know we have a laugh about you, you said Wayne Rooney's a student of the game. We're all students of the game. Wayne's going to do it. Scott Parker's a student of the game. People say to me, and I don't mean them two people, they come across really well. What, in an interview after they've been beaten? Well, that's great, that.
So, I made the mistake of saying a student of the game on television once. I think he said it about 400 times to me.
But we're all students of the game, it makes
sense. In the last 3 months.
I know you've got to say something on television. People go, you said about Phil. Phil loves the game. We all love the game. Do you think Phil loves the game more than me? I'm not knocking Phil. But if people on the television go, someone loves it. Let me tell you, if you're going to go into management or coaching, you better love the game.
This is the bits I love about having conversations with you.
It is, but... Jesus, I go back to it, dear. When we were watching matches, I remember when I was up at Sunderland, I came in one Monday morning, and Real Madrid was on the night before against Barcelona, and the staff were having a cup of tea, and I went, what a game that was last night. Barcelona. One of the staff went, I didn't know it was on. What do you mean? I didn't advertise the last 3 weeks. I was on the and I think he said something. I was at my wife in York. I should have sacked him on the spot. Get out. I didn't see it. You're like, you've got to have a passion for the game. If you don't watch Barcelona and Real Madrid on a Sunday, wait, get out. I should have got rid of him.
What do you argue about at home with Teresa? What do you actually get wound up about at home? Food?
No. Well, she makes me a meal. not food. How can you argue about
anything
food?
Anything, I do.
Do you, at home? No, what do we argue about?
Like, you check the fridge and it's not got, like...
Yeah.
You check the chocolate in it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, listen, I'm with you, we're on the same page, Chocolate supplies are low. But I think Teresa's a bit like what you would say, you try and anticipate that you read before it gets too late. But I very rarely argue. Honestly, I've got a great home life. Really good, really good home life. I have to say,
the trees with the kids ever go on the walks with you with the dogs?
No. But they think that's my time.
Is that your time? Where you
a bit? A bit. I asked them yesterday, and they were like, they looked at me as if I had two heads. But I've got my music here. I'd have my headphones on.
You've got AirPods.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Listen to music. What music? What's your playlist? Go on. What's Roy Keane's playlist? Let's get this.
No, the kids do it for me.
The Pogues, you two.
Gary, you're stereotyping me, aren't you?
The Blossoms.
Blossoms, The Killers, Ian Brown, Liam Gallagher. I listen to a bit of Noel Gallagher, but he irritates the life out of me.
Roy, brilliant to talk to you. See you soon.
Cheers, Nev. Quite enjoyable.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.